Welcome to This Is Money Podcast. I'm Georgie Frost, and joining me and editor Simon Lambert today is assistant editor Helen Crane. And coming up, sterling falls, energy prices freeze, and savings rates are on the rise. Plus, what to do with a big windfall, and when will we see King Charles on our banknotes and coins? Don't forget, you stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app.
Market updates and conversations around the financial world don't have to be boring. The Digest and Invest podcast by eToro is a great way to tune into what's happening in a fun and easily digestible format. Discover the Digest and Invest podcast at etoro.com/academy/podcasts.
But first, sterling slid to its lowest level since 1985 against the dollar on Friday, with concerns that the country is headed for a prolonged recession. Pound dropped 0.8%. in the morning trading in London to $1.137. It's the first time it's breached the $1.14 mark in almost four decades. So, Simon Lambert, what does it mean?
Well, unfortunately, it potentially means more inflation for us here in the UK, because it means that all the things that we buy priced in dollars become more expensive in pounds. Oil, for example. But there's a number of different things going on here that need to be unpicked to an extent. So you've got concerns over the UK economy are one of them, that we are going to fall into a recession. The UK is suffering from a higher dose of inflation than many other developed economies. And then we are seeing interest rates go up. With interest rates going up, that slows the economy. Are we potentially raising rates into a recession? If you look at the interest rate expectations now and how much people could end up paying on their mortgages versus what they were a year ago, then you can see how the brakes are really being slammed on the economy. But there's also an element where the pound is falling against the dollar because we aren't putting up interest rates fast enough, because the US is putting up interest rates even faster than we are, or by an even larger amount. It started later, but it's gone bigger. And as countries raise their interest rates, they become more attractive places for the sort of large amounts of institutional money that wash around the world to be placed for a relatively safe rate of return, because you can buy that country's government bonds. As an institutional investor, you can put money into mega cash funds, and you can get a higher interest rate return. And so you find some of the money washes out of the places with the lower interest rates and into the places with the higher interest rates. Now, in theory, we should be benefiting because interest rates are going up quite rapidly in this country. We've gone from 0.1% to 1.75%, but they've been going up even faster in the US. There were some inflation numbers in the US this week, where they came in, core inflation came in higher than was expected. There was a hope that inflation had peaked in the US. That's fed through to the thought that the Fed might now raise interest rates by 1% over there rather than 0.75% expected. But even if it doesn't do that next week, there's the expectation that it's going to have to keep really cracking down hard on the inflation nut and driving up interest rates, which means that the interest rate in the US is going to be higher than the interest rate here. So pound falls against the dollar, even though there is now talk that interest rates in this country may not go up by 0.5% next week, or 0.5%. Let's talk like that, because that's how everybody understands it. I know it's not entirely correct, right? But they might go up 0.75%. I mean, that's quite a dramatic turnaround in the whole interest rate story compared to what we were talking about a year ago.
Simon, it's what we've been talking about for the last 10 years. We never thought we'd see, you know, any kind of rise. Nothing really happened, and now it's all going off. But do you still think it's going to be as high as 0.75 after we got some inflation figures falling ever so slightly, even though core inflation up ever so slightly? Still think it's going to be as high as a 0.75 move?
Well, therein comes the next piece that needs to be unpicked from this, which is something that we're going to talk about in the minute, which is what's going to happen to inflation over the course of the next year, and how does that fit in with energy prices? Because the energy price guarantee freeze on the price cap means the price cap's not going to go up anywhere near as much as expected, which means that expectations for what's going to happen to inflation over the next year have been dramatically downgraded, but we're talking about the forecasts of where people were talking about 15%, 18%, 20% inflation at some point over the next year. And there's talk that maybe you're going to get 5 percentage points taken off those numbers. Now, that could be on it, depending on which number of those you use, that could be 8%, 13%, 15%. Actually, if you look at some of the forecasts, there's an expectation that perhaps it will come down and average about 5.5% next year. But even then, 5.5% inflation is something that the Bank of England really needs to crack down on to stop inflation expectations being baked in. And we saw a study come out this week saying that people's inflation expectations for the period ahead have shifted up dramatically. And once that starts to get baked in, you get higher wage increases and so on. You get companies raising prices even more, and you get this inflationary spiral that we talk about in theory in the textbooks. And that's what the Bank of England is trying to crack down on, to the point where effectively the message is, yeah, we will do this even if it means a recession. So who knows? I mean, it's really difficult to tell. What I do know is that although most people are on fixed rate mortgages and are thus protected from this, when people come to remortgage, they're going to face substantially higher payments, which is going to slam the brakes on. But the energy price rises were almost like monetary policy part two for the Bank of England, in that it could raise interest rates, but also it knew in the background the economy was going to be dampened by these hideous energy price rises that we were going to get. And so now, does it need to raise interest rates by more because the effect of that has fallen out? Does it need to raise them by less because the inflation number is going to be lower? We don't really know. And they're going to have to unpick this as they go along. And being the Bank of England, being the Monetary Policy Commission, they're going to be spending a lot of time looking at the data points. And there has been some work done to try and get some of these data points to be a bit more timely, because quite often stuff happens and you feel that the Bank of England is behind the curve. We've talked about this, why they should have raised interest rates before they raised interest rates, why they shouldn't have been at 0.1%. for so long, when it was abundant that the pandemic economy was somehow, you know, after the initial shock, managing to boom, ranging from the boom in garden furniture to hot tubs to staycations to all those other things.
All right, well, we shall see. We don't have long to wait to see what the Bank of England decide to do, but let us go, because you've teased it now, to the help that was recently unveiled by the new Prime Minister, Liz Truss, to help us with our soaring energy bills. This is, as you mentioned, Simon, there, the energy price guarantee. It means the average British household's gas and electricity bill will be frozen at £2,500 for the next 2 years. That's around £1,000 lower than what we were expecting to come in October, Ofgem's energy price cap. So what will it mean for our energy bills? What will we end up paying? What happens if you've locked into a fixed rate? And importantly, what help is there for businesses? Helen, just explain to me the new price guarantee in a bit more detail. What are we actually going to be paying? Are we going to still get that rebate?
Sure. So this is Liz Truss's big flagship policy that she announced on the first day, I think the second day maybe, that she was Prime Minister. Before, obviously, we got the sad news about the Queen and everything kind of changed. But basically, energy bills are going to be capped at £2,500 a year for the next 2 years. So that's an average based on average sort of household usage. So for some people, it'll still be more. For some people, it'll be less. But that's based on the average household. It's quite a bit less than it would have been if this policy hadn't come in. So before that, the Ofgem price cap was supposed to go up on the 1st of October to £3,549 a year. So it's a reasonably big reduction. However, energy bills are still going to be much more than they were even a year ago. So the price cap before all this happened was £1,971 a year. A year ago, it was less than £1,000, I think I'm right in saying. So bills will be a bit less than they would have been, but it's still much more than people have paid historically. We will still get that £400 rebate, so that's staying. It's reasonably good news, but energy bills are still going to be much higher than people have been used to paying, and it's still going to be tough for a lot of people.
Do we know if we're going to get the rebate in the second year?
No, that's unconfirmed as yet. So people will definitely get it the first year, but the second year yet to be decided. People will still get the council tax rebate. This is the £150 for people in bands A to C. But yeah, that £400, not sure about whether that's going to happen in year two.
And what about if you're on a fixed deal?
This is one of the tricky things. So obviously most people aren't on fixed deals at the moment. As prices went up, when fixes ends, people tend to drop onto the standard variable rate because that was cheaper than any of the fixes that were available. But I think there are still about 15% of people who are on fixed tariffs. Some of those people will be people who fixed before this all happened and are still on quite cheap rates. I'm one of those people and I feel extremely lucky. I fixed for 2 years in, I think, August last year, just before this all kicked off. So I feel extremely grateful for that. But there are other people who've kind of gambled on a fixed deal more recently, thinking that, you know, fixes are expensive, but if the price cap goes up more, they think they might have kind of... Liz Truss has said that people who are on fixed deals will be entitled to a rate reduction on their tariff, basically to bring it in line with the £2,500 freeze. So it will mean on the average household that will cut about £1,000 off their bill. So they'll be in roughly the same position as people who are on the variable tariffs.
All right then, Simon, help for businesses in there a little bit, we saw, needed.
Very much needed, because businesses are suffering even more than households to an extent. And they have said that they are going to offer a similar help in terms of unit pricing to businesses, but it's only 6 months. And then they're going to review it and they're going to look at what they're going to try and do. And I think that businesses would really have liked a little bit more certainty.
Yeah,
okay, it takes them through the winter, but they would have liked a bit more certainty. I think what the government is trying to do here is trying to balance what is ultimately a colossal bailout for consumers and businesses, £150 billion, if energy prices go where they're expected to go, with trying to limit the bits where they could end up committing to spending a lot more than they could maybe get away with doing. So, for example, I think the government is really hoping that energy prices actually start to come down. And it's potentially possible that if Europe gets its act together properly and we have a mild winter and Europe ends up nowhere near as reliant upon Russian gas as has been thought, that you could start to see the gas price come down. I mean, gas has been driven up to a very, very high price. Prices swing around. The pendulum swings too far one way and too far the other. We saw it swing too far the other during the pandemic, actually, when, funnily enough, not that long ago, people were being paid to use electricity at one point on some tariffs. And it's now swung way too far the other way. And I think there is a hope in the government that, and maybe it is just a bit of a blind hope, but that energy prices will come down. If energy prices do come down, that should feed through relatively quickly to businesses for whom there is still a market for, you know, fixing tariffs and things like that, because they don't have that price cap to rely on. And maybe the government's hoping that, you know, going into kind of April, May time, they might be able to get away with not offering the same level of help as they're having to offer right now going into autumn and winter. And I think that's also what lies behind the £400 rebate as well. Also, the other things coming in here are the fact that there is a push to try to stop paying low-cost renewable producers the absolutely eye-watering sums for electricity that we are paying them, because the price of electricity is set by the cost of a marginal unit. The marginal unit comes from gas. Gas is expensive. So we're paying gas prices for people to generate wind and solar energy. It's a bit more complicated than that, the entire system with contracts for difference and stuff like that, but that's the basic nub of it. And then the other thing that we need to do is we need to try to encourage people to use less energy and try to crack down on it. But, you know, you have to remember that ultimately, why are they doing this? They're doing this because of the astronomical increase in energy prices. And where's that coming from? Because energy prices have effectively been weaponized due to Russia's invasion of Ukraine and what's going on there. And that, you know, to be honest, I have a degree of sympathy with this, despite the fact that the bailout is so expensive, in that that is not the consumer's fault.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, so.
Well, I'm going to ask you how we're going to pay for it in a minute. But Helen, just want to know, in terms of consumers, that's the business argument. And by the way, I know quite how much businesses are paying for their energy costs, because after a year of being in my apartment, British Gas now seem to think I'm a business. And I almost cried or screamed when I received my latest bill, which was way into the thousands. I was like, and it's a business account. So there you go. Much sympathy for those who are on business. And I also have to, I'm staring down the barrel of a very long conversation with British Gas that I'm trying to put off. But anyway, Helen, sorry, I got distracted there. Those on the lowest incomes, the help, I mean, you touched on it there. Look, this, even with this price guarantee, and with the £400 rebate, you're looking at about £200 extra than what you were already paying, which is a huge amount more than what we were paying, you know, a year ago. For some people, this is, you know, that already, we know people are already struggling now. Do you think this trust has just gone, look, I've done the price guarantee, that's enough? Or are we going to get a little bit more targeted help, do you think, for those on the lowest income, the most vulnerable?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite unclear, to be honest. Obviously, there's been kind of a pause on any policy announcements for the last week or so since this £2,500 cap was introduced because of the Queen. So there hasn't been much follow up. I mean, it would be great to hear some more help for people on the lowest incomes. One of the things that's been talked about is of course, with bills being so high for the past few months, a lot of people have fallen into debt to their energy supplier. And one of the ideas floating around is that energy debt could be wiped out to help those who are really struggling, to stop them kind of spiraling into, you know, sort of hefty debt with their energy companies. We don't know if that's something the government would consider. You know, there is help that people on low incomes can still get. It's not necessarily a lot, but you can get the Warm Home discount, which is £150 off your bills. And that applies every year from November. You can also speak to your local council, depending on where you live. They quite often have schemes where you can get sort of grants and things like that if you're really struggling with your bills. And also always worth speaking to your supplier. You know, it can be tempting to sort of bury your head in the sand if you're struggling to pay. But if you speak to them, they might be able to put you on a payment plan so you can pay your bills over a longer period of time. Or quite a lot of them have kind of charity arms or sort of funds where they, which are specifically set up to help people who are struggling to pay their bills. So always worth chatting to your supplier if you are struggling.
So Simon, back to you. How are we going to pay for all this?
Don't know, really. Borrowing money, I guess.
And we already have quite a large coronavirus bill that, you know, is just sat there.
Do you know what? I'd argue this is actually part of the coronavirus bill, in all honesty. Some of it is. Some of this is, you know, this started before the war in Ukraine. The tail end of this is actually part of the COVID bill. And then you've got the war in Ukraine.
It's a lot of money, it's getting more.
And then you're like, and then you say, well, is this a bung to the consumer, or is this the cost of war? I don't know. It's one of those two. You know, where does it lie on that spectrum? The government had to do something. The astronomical bills that people were faced with, for those at the lower end of the scale, it's still really bad. There's still going to be people choosing between heating and eating. But even for those higher up the scale, it's a huge amount more that we've talked about this many times before than many people were expected to pay. People were, you know, there's been talked about, oh, this is a bung for the middle classes. They're going to help pay for the heat, their swimming pools and their jacuzzis and their wine fridges and stuff like that. I've seen quotes. But actually, do you know what? It's not really, because you're still paying much more for energy than you were a year ago, right? And almost everybody is definitely feeling that one. even rich people are complaining about this stuff, and people are definitely going to try to crack down on their energy usage over the course of the winter because their bills are that much higher than is expected. And it's not you only pay £2,500 and then fill your boots, kids, use as much energy as you want. It's you still pay the unit price. So the more energy you use, the more you will pay. And I spoke to someone over the summer, before many of these terrible price cap forecasts were coming in, when there was still hope that, you know, it wouldn't come down in October, it might come down a bit. And so they were paying, you know, bills based on the price cap we've got at the moment, which people are going to be paying a little bit more of. Swimming pool, they've had an indoor swimming pool, done, not using it anymore, not heating it, not using it because of the cost of it, because it was costing them so much money. But I guess the thing that people want to know is actually not only how is the nation going to pay for this, but how much are they going to pay? Right? This is the crucial information, because it is really quite confusing. We talk about the price cap figure, you know, and now it's even more confusing because you've got this new price cap figure, this freeze at £2,500, but then everybody's going to get £400 back, which they're going to get taken off their bills in installments from October onwards over a few months. So just to give some numbers on this, if you pay £1,000 now, so this is for people who are on an energy price cap tariff, if you pay £1,000 a year now, you will pay £868 under this plan, including the £400 rebate. All these figures include the £400 rebate. So you will pay slightly less money. If you pay £1,500 now, you'll pay about £1,500 with this. So that's the kind of break-even point. If you pay £2,000 now, you pay £2,140. £2,500, pay about £2,800. £3,000, you'll pay about £3,400. £3,500, you pay about £4,050. £4,000, you pay £4,700. £4,500, pay about £4,300. And if you've got a £5,000 energy bill, ouch, then you will be paying about £6,000 under this new plan. So as you can see, people will be paying more. The people who have the biggest bills, who are likely to have the larger homes and use, obviously they use the most energy, they're going to end up paying more. The people with smaller homes will fortunately be paying slightly less, but they're still going to be paying a lot more than they were paying a year ago.
Just a quickie, Helen. We've got a mini budget coming up. Tax cuts, though. So what's going on? I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Who knows what's going to be announced in this mini budget, to be honest. It's it's set for next week. I mean, some tax cuts would be great. I think that's obviously the promise that Liz Truss kind of ran her campaign on, was to cut taxes for people. Who knows where the money for that's going to come from. But she had to get elected somehow, didn't she? So we will see. I'll be very interested to hear where that money is coming from. I mean, it might be one of those where it's all kind of, you know, recycled kind of funds from other places. But yeah, genuinely don't know.
Yeah, it's a quandary. Anyway, let's move on from that. Better news in the savings market. No sooner have This Is Money announced a new Best Buy cash ISA, it seems another jumps up the savings rates league table to claim the top spot and seizing the limelight this time. Well, this week is Santander launching a new easy access cash ISA paying 1.85% interest. But Simon Lambert, you've been tapping away on your laptop computer thing. Despite rates rapidly rising, don't let inertia eat into your returns.
Yeah, but just to be clear, I don't actually tap away on a laptop computer thing. No, I write on an old fashioned typewriter whilst wearing a hat with a card stuffed
Marvelous.
In the band.
Yeah,
because I'm a journalist.
And a cigar and coffee.
And then I phone someone up and I dictate the copy down the phone to
Brilliant.
Them.
That's exactly what I had in mind there, Simon. Okay, yeah, so when you're doing this,
fortunately I don't do that, otherwise when I'm doing my newsletter message on a Wednesday evening for Thursday morning, nobody would ever be getting home. It's bad enough writing on one of those computer laptopy type things. Yes, savings, it's good news. Look, rates are going up. I mean, we haven't been really being able to talk about this kind of scenario in a long time. I named a couple of good deals in my column and said by the time you're reading this, they may not even be the best ones. They're coming so thick and fast. compared to the absolute dearth of decent deals that we had in years gone by. And we have a new savings alert system, which people can sign up to, and we will email them our pick of the top deals as they land. And we won't spam them. We will literally just be savings deals. And our readers love a savings story. But as I said in my column, we're used to seeing names that people may not have heard of at the top of those savings tables. Al Ryan Bank has the best easy access account. BLME has the top 1 year fixed rate. And then lo and behold, as you said, who suddenly pops up? Some little known contender that maybe one day will turn out to be a big bank. Santander. Wow. I mean, what are they doing offering a decent cash ISA? I thought big banks never gave you good savings rates.
Well, that is what we have been saying, isn't it? So what's been going on?
There's a lot more competition in the market. And this is feeding into Lee Boyce's argument that we are going to get a good cash ISA season come the turn of the year.
He's so excited.
He's looking ahead. He's looking at his crystal ball. Mm. So, I mean, this is good news. Santander has obviously decided to play. And let's hope that this triggers the other big banks to up their game as well. I want to see Halifax. I want to see Nationwide. I want to see Barclays. I want to see RBS, NatWest fighting it out right to now. Offer people the best possible savings rates. Show those contenders who's really boss. I'm thinking maybe the Rocky music behind this, perhaps.
Okay. Either way.
Yeah. So, I mean, whether that's going to happen or not of course, another matter. We could be waiting a long time for the big banks to come in and really start smacking things around in the savings market. But as it stands, this is good news. The bad news, of course, is that none of these rates come anywhere near matching inflation. But that means that it's even more important to try to get the best possible rate and narrow that gap as much as possible to minimize the amount of money that you are losing there.
But the question is, Helen, with rates rising, and we do expect another Bank of England rate rise, and you know, savings rates could hopefully rise on the top of that, do you fix? Do you wait?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? We've kind of written our savings reporter, Ed has spoken about this before, savings FOMO, fear of missing out. So this is the idea that people, they're seeing rates going up so quickly, you know, they're seeing all the stories popping up on our website every day, you know, new Best Buys. They're thinking, well, why would I fix now when, you know, a couple of weeks down the line, an even better rate might come up? That's, you know, there is some sort of validity to that. But I think the way that you need to think of it is, say if you're, you know, your savings are in an account today paying almost nothing, the interest that you would earn in those few weeks on a slightly, you know, on today's best savings deal, if you, you know, if you waited a few weeks, you'll be earning that interest. So it might kind of all, you know, you might end up just as with the same amount of interest, essentially, if you waited for a few weeks having no interest and went on to a slightly higher rate. It's a tricky one to work out. But I mean, the thing to remember is as well, if it's an easy access account, you can always switch to a better deal if you see one come along. So I opened a new ISA about 6 months ago at a rate of just over 1%, which at the time was a really, really good deal. But now we've got this Santander one, which is 1.85, and that's just in 6 months. So, I mean, there's nothing to stop me switching my ISA into this new account. So it's a bit of hassle, but you can, if it's easy access, you're always sort of free to switch. So it's worth doing.
Just a quick one, Helen, your Twitter followers will be wondering, what happened to your credit card? You've Santander.
Yeah, so I'm off on holiday on Monday and
lovely. Where are you going? Anywhere nice?
I'm going to Miami. Which, oh, wow. Yeah, nice. It should be fun. Gonna rain most of the time. Okay. But you know,
you're British, it's you're used to it, it's fine.
Exactly.
It's not. I've looked at the weather forecast. We've had this conversation a number of times over the past week. If you actually look in detail at the days, there is rain, but there's lots of sunshine. I'm saying things swing around quickly in Miami. That Helen's going to come back. She's going to tell us she had amazing weather. I'm going great weather
for
Helen.
Spirit. That's the spirit, Simon. We like that. But sadly, one little stumbling block for you.
Yeah, so I thought I was being really clever. I was in need of a new credit card anyway, so I thought I'd apply for one that had fee-free spending abroad, which would sort out the issue of, you know, obviously not getting charged massive fees on holiday. So I applied about a month ago for this card with Santander. Went through all the application, sent off my ID documents. This was, I think, like the 25th of August. Thought it was going to be all good to go, and then started getting these emails from Santander saying, we haven't received your ID documents. And I was like, well, sent them a week ago, then got another one, we haven't received your ID documents. And it's been nearly a month now, and they're still saying they either haven't got these documents or they're not right. And I've sent them like three times now. I know there's like mail delays, but come on, like they must have received something. But it's really frustrating because it's one of these automated emails. And they're not making it clear whether they haven't received them or they've received them and they're not right. So I just keep posting them different random items of ID.
Do you know who I am?
Well, I tried, but they didn't seem to go for it.
On the case article coming.
I mean, that was the point of my tweet. I was trying to, you know, get a bit of a rise out of them. It didn't work. They just said you've got to call us, and I couldn't be bothered because the waiting times are like 2 hours, and I do have a life. So I ended up, I don't think it's going to arrive in time. So I've ended up having to get a post office cash card, which is actually quite good. So you can basically just load a bunch of money onto it and get it on an app as well. And just spend it, like use it like you would a debit card. So I think hopefully that's going to be quite good. But yeah, it's a bit of a pain that I mean, hopefully this credit card will turn up at some point, but yeah, you never know.
We'll be after Miami.
Yeah, well, not massively impressed with Santander, but we'll see.
But the cash ices are going up, so you know, swings and roundabouts, Helen. Yeah. Swings and roundabouts. That's it for part one.
I'm joined now by Sam Northby-Toro for our weekly look at what's been going on the markets. Sam, what have we seen over the past week?
Well, following on from a few good days coming into this week, everything was set nicely for a lower than expected US inflation number. The markets had been pushing upwards into the event, and then suddenly the core inflation number, which doesn't include volatile food and fuel costs, well, that came in higher, and then the market really sort of fell lower and all hell broke loose. Some equity markets suffered their worst days since 2020, and right now it's a bit of a struggle to find a sort of silver lining. The peak inflation crowd are now obviously a little bit worried in the US, and this in turn has increased the chance of a more aggressive rate hike next week from the Federal Reserve. As we know, US fundamentals really sort of rule the world. I mean, there was a little bit of a positive in the UK, I guess, with UK inflation coming down a touch, but pretty much all markets have been dragged down by the US this week.
And next week, we've not only got the Federal Reserve bringing in a decision, we've got one over here as well, haven't we? What's expected from both the Fed and the Bank of England?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously Monday is going to be the bank holiday for the Queen's funeral, and that, and you know, that whole situation, unfortunately, led to the Bank of England postponing it to Thursday. So Thursday midday, Bank of England. And it's kind of a coin toss at the moment between whether they're going to raise rates by 50 basis points or 75. I think I'd like to see 75. And I think they've got to be a little bit more aggressive following Liz Truss's sort of bailout package. And then on the day before that, the Federal Reserve, it's whether they're going to raise by 75 basis points, which is pretty much all priced in. Or 100 basis points, 1%, which would be a bit of a shock compared to a week ago. But that percentage chance is creeping up more and more now. So, yeah, quiet start to the week with the bank holiday. But then Wednesday, Thursday is going to be pretty busy. I mean, there are some other data points to keep an eye on. But we also have the Italian elections actually at the back end of next week. So, yeah, I'm expecting volatility again, one way or another.
If we'd have been having this conversation a year ago, suggesting that interest rates would go up by 75 basis points or even 1% in the US and 75 basis points here, people would have thought we were insane, wouldn't they?
I know, yeah. What a difference a year makes, honestly.
Okay, well, we'll see what's happened. Sam, thank you very much. Speak to you next week.
Thanks, Simon.
Welcome back. Reader question time now. My husband and I have just been gifted a life-changing $500,000 sum by my father-in-law, who's just sold his business. Very nice. The question is, what to do with it? Pay off the mortgage, but there's an early repayment charge to consider. And even then, after that, there's still quite a substantial amount left over. Simon, what's the issue here?
Well, the question is that somebody has been given a huge sum of money, £500,000. That's a lot of money, even in today's day and age. And they want to pay off their mortgage, which is £220,000. But their mortgage has early repayment charges. So what do you do? Do you just suck up the early repayment charges and just pay off the mortgage now, get it cleared, and then they'd like to invest the rest of the money and then get that money invested and crack on? Or do you decide that you don't want to pay those charges, those early repayment charges, so you stick the money for the mortgage in savings, which is at least earning you some interest? You then invest the rest of the money and you pay off the mortgage when the early repayment charges are up. Or is there anything else you can do? So Ed Magnus had a look at this in quite a lot of depth and talked to some experts. And basically, if you want to do the absolute best possible deal answer for you, what you can do is take advantage of the fact that most mortgages allow you to make overpayments of up to 10% per year without penalty. So do those overpayments of 10% per year for the next 2 years, which is how long the early repayment charges last. Get the money in a best buy fixed rate savings account, but not the money that you need to make those overpayments. Put that in an easy access account, so you're at least earning a rate on it. Put the rest of the mortgage money in a savings account, getting the best possible rate that you can, so you get the interest on that. And then at the end of the 2 year period, when the mortgage is up, you clear the mortgage. And also at the same time, you think about investing the rest of your lump sum. But I think most people would really struggle to work out what they're going to do to invest that kind of lump sum. And so this is very much a potential area where you might need to be seeking some form of professional financial advice, or even actually in this kind of bracket, you'd be falling into wealth management territory as well, which is different to financial advice and financial planning. Financial planning tends to look kind of at your whole life and your goals and where you want to go and what you want to do. Financial planning in this kind of instance would probably be quite good. Financial advice tends to be there's a big crossover Venn diagram situation going on here. That financial advice tends to be more about doing a specific thing. You know, I want to set up a pension, I want to do this, but they will look at your whole finances and make suggestions. Wealth management tends to be more about, I've got this sum of money, I've got this savings, I want to have it invested, and a wealth manager will go and they will invest the money for you. And there may be a scenario where that you just give them the money and they look after it and so on. Or there may be a scenario where they tell you to put it into this and put it into that, and they look after it. And then on the other side of things, you've got the DIY investing route where you just choose your own investments yourself. Alternatively, as Ed says here, you could just decide to pay those early repayment charges, to suck up that sum and just clear the mortgage early, and then it's done and you can move on rather than having this hanging over you for 2 years. But what a lovely problem to have.
Yes, indeed. Absolutely. All right, then. Let's move on, finally, with the passing of Her Majesty the Queen. What will happen to banknotes and coins? Presumably, the existing ones will remain legal tender and the new ones will start to feature King Charles III, asked one of your readers. But, Helen, how quickly will this happen?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's obviously going to take quite a while. The Bank of England hasn't really given us much of a clue about when we're going to start seeing banknotes and coins with Charles's face on. This is partly because they're in a period of mourning. So we contacted the bank and they said they wouldn't be responding at this time. Could take years, I think, is the consensus. They have to do a lot of things before we can actually get someone's face on a note. They have to commission a portrait of Charles to be put on the notes. And interestingly, this is something I didn't know, he will be facing west on the notes rather than east, which is the way the Queen faces. That's a tradition. They go east, west, east, west. Who knows why? But very interesting.
Someone will know why, but we don't. Interesting fact.
Yeah, so I think it's going to take quite some time before we start to see notes with Charles's face on it, but not really much information around on it at the moment.
It's quite difficult to find out the answers to these things at the moment, because
it's all rather new, though, isn't it? I mean,
well, no, because some organisations' press offices are refusing to answer questions because they're in a period of national mourning. But yeah, this was one of the first questions that cropped up. In fact, actually, this question cropped up in my very house when my daughter asked me, "So, what will happen to the money?" I was like, "What? So, what will happen to the money? Will we still be able to spend it?" I was like, "Yeah, we'll still be able to spend it." I said, "But you'll get the new king on it." She said, "What's, you know, straight away, will they just take all of the ones with the queen on out and they'll stop working, being able to be spent? And then we'll have to start spending the king." I was like, no, take quite a long time. Yeah. But this is it does represent this, you know, very different world that we're in, doesn't it? Because 70 years, I mean, that's an extremely long time for people to have got used to one way of doing things. And, you know, so for example, when they release a new banknote, for example, a new £5 note, new £20 note, and so on, you have a certain amount of time in which you can keep spending them, that they are legal tender, and which doesn't mean what a lot of people think it means. But then they'll start to withdraw them. But you can always swap your existing notes for the new one at the Bank of England. So you could go into the Bank of England with your old note. You could say, "I'd like you to give me a £5 that I can actually spend in the shop because I'm no longer able to spend these £5 in the shop." And they will give you that £5. Now, you'd think, though, with the banknotes with the Queen on, that they would make that period longer than they would perhaps make it for when they just do a new design on a £5 note or something, wouldn't you? Because you wouldn't want to think that they were rushing to get rid of the banknotes with the Queen on them. But then to the same extent, I guess they're going to probably want to get some of the new ones with King Charles on out there so that they are in circulation, so that it's not taking years and years and years for them to come into common circulation. I do know that, having looked at what King Charles has been up to in terms of his busy schedule over the past week, it might take a while before they manage to get him to sit down for a portrait. Don't forget, this is there's going to be that whole serial number thing, isn't there, when the new notes get released. You know, trying to get the lowest number serial. There is going to be an absolute bonanza of that. Absolute bonanza of that. Yeah.
Can't wait.
And I'm already seeing people talking about, I'm going to hold on to some of my ones with the Queen on because they could be worth some money one day.
Yeah, I was looking on eBay the other day. I don't really know why, it's the sort of thing that I do, to see whether the price of like commemorative coins and stuff have gone up. And also, I kind of just want to see if anyone was yet listing like a Queen Elizabeth £10 note for like a stupid amount of money, because they don't understand that we're still going to have them for ages. But they weren't. I did notice, so the commemorative coins that they bought out for particularly the 1977 Jubilee, the 25 years, there's this one commemorative coin. Some people are listing it for £2 and some people are listing it for like £150. It's like, I would love to know what the actual value of these things are. But yeah, eBay, coin eBay is it's a wild west at the minute.
It is indeed. Right, that's it for this week. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team, anything you'd like them to look into, Simon?
You can email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk. You can tweet us at thisismoney, and you can come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to find all podcasts past and join in the debate in reader comments.
And if you like our podcast, why not rate us wherever you found us? It helps other people find us too.
Market updates and conversations around the financial world don't have to be boring. The Digest and Invest podcast by eToro is a great way to tune into what's happening in a fun and easily digestible format. Discover the Digest and Invest podcast at eToro.com/academy/podcasts.